It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life with your host, Alan Gervie. Alan is the managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening. I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law. Happy 4th of July weekend. I have a disclaimer right now before we go any further as the music kind of quiets down, takes us out. My disclaimer, without music, but there's still a little music. There, it's gone.
There we go.
I don't celebrate 4th of July weekend. So I had to have Leanne Tweeden here. So she can tell us exactly what 4th of July means to her and why she is such a great patriot.
Well, 4th of July happens to be my wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, thank you very much.
How many years is it?
12.
You had to think about that.
12. Yes, because I had to think 22. So 12, but we've been together almost 20. So 4th of July, I figured with my husband, you know, if you're in America, you're always going to get fireworks on your anniversary.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
Everybody's like excited. You go somewhere, you got fireworks for free.
And sometimes they're even in the bedroom.
Exactly. We got two kids, right? It worked out. So then you have fireworks. It's an anniversary date that he will not forget.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not an easy one to forget, 4th of July. Oh, it's my wedding anniversary, too. So made it easy for him. And, you know, it's just a celebration. My husband's a colonel in the Air Force and in the Air National Guard. And my dad was in the military. So it's just been a very patriotic. It's kind of one of those fun weekends where, you know, we celebrate our independence and it's, you know, everything's red, white and blue and you get fireworks. Everybody's in a good festive mood. It's warm and there's you know, barbecues and get togethers. We're going to go to a local school and watch the fireworks with our friends.
Wait a second. We're going to a local school, too.
I'm sure we're going to the same local school. I'm sure.
Did you go last year?
No.
It was actually a lot of fun.
They had it last year?
Yes. If it's the same local school.
I thought they had it 2 years
ago.
High school. And we were there. They had the flyover. I don't think it was last year, though. 2 years ago.
I'm not sure. I thought it was last year.
Maybe,
but I'll
maybe.
Check on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting you talk about Colonel.
Uh-huh.
And I want to get back to, you know, the 4th of July and everything. But our guest today, his father was a colonel.
Oh, wow.
For many years. And when we hear his story, it's interesting because his father does play a role in the story. Our guest is John Paul MacIsaac. Does that ring a bell, folks, all you listeners?
I bet they might not be familiar with his name, but the minute you talk about his story.
How about if I say the infamous Delaware repair shop guy?
Hunter Biden laptop.
The Hunter Biden laptop guy.
Yes.
So you don't know his name.
Right.
You don't know that his father is a colonel, but we do know that he has a lot of names that people know him as.
Right. And it's interesting. He's a Mac repairman, and his middle name is also Mac.
I don't know if that's his middle name, but we're going to find out about that connection, whether he created it because he's a Mac repairman. But real interesting show talking about Hunter Biden's laptop and some of the behavior that John Paul MacIsaac experienced firsthand. But let's just get back before we talk to John Paul, and we have to find out what we call him. John,
yes.
Paul, Mac, Isaac.
John, buddy.
Repair guy. He's got a fascinating story, so we're looking forward to that. Don't miss it. And is there a connection to July 4th weekend having John Paul MacIsaac on? If there is, Leanne, can you tell us what it is?
I would think that, you know, it sounds like from everything I've read and like you said about his connections to the military with his father, he's a patriot. And a lot of patriots in this country, you know, appreciate 4th of July for our freedom and becoming our own country and being sovereign. So I would think that probably he's a pretty patriotic guy if I had to guess. We'll ask him.
Well, do you think his actions have been patriotic?
I think so. Yes, because I think, you know, in the end, everyone just wants the truth, right? And I think he felt like the truth was being suppressed and democracy in this country was threatened. And, you know, he's also got a lawsuit against, you know, Adam Schiff, CNN, a couple other publications.
Is that patriotic?
I don't know. You're a lawyer. Isn't it patriotic if you feel like somebody's, you know, libel or anything else that is false against you and they print it to try to divert from a true story and mm-hmm. things that are lies?
Well,
I think so.
This country is founded, or it was supposed to be founded, on honesty, integrity.
Absolutely. Which I think things that are.
That is kind of.
I don't even think if people know what that those things are anymore.
Words cannot be defined any further as we relate them to this country, but which is sad, obviously.
Yes.
But, you know, clearly trying to do the right thing.
Right.
That would be patriotic, I would think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think if that's your fundamental belief and that's where you're coming from, I don't think you can fault anybody for trying to bring out the truth and have it be seen. And then when you're slandered or libeled against and people are trying to, you know, throw these false accusations against you, if we're to believe him and that this is, you know, his case – then, you know, I think, you know, that's the greatness of America, right? That we have a pretty great judicial system and that he can get justice somehow through the legal system.
You know, interestingly, last week we talked about the justice system and I said it wasn't pretty great, but that's my own personal opinion.
But I think it compared to a lot of – it's not perfect. I mean, no system is ever perfect, right? But I think, you know, with having a jury of our peers and we do a pretty good job compared to a lot of countries I've been to where there is no justice system and, you know, either the police or the people that do work in their quote-unquote justice system are corrupt or can be bought off. And I think our system is still pretty great.
So standing up for what's right, where there were false claims that he was peddling Russian disinformation, you know, that's probably not patriotic. When you think about patriotism for you, what is it? Because I'm Canadian,
right.
And I should I've lived here more years than I actually lived in Canada. But I still remain a Canadian citizen. My kids have dual citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm not into July 4th weekend. Can you tell me what I'm missing?
You know, I think when you're born here and you're an American and it's just been a part of your DNA, and like I said, maybe it's a little bit different for me because my father had served. So from being born, I was always instilled with, you know, you're very lucky to be born in this country and the freedoms that we have and the ability for you even as a female to go out and try to achieve your dreams and have those freedoms. And I think that that is pretty patriotic and pretty unique to America.
You've done so much in your lifetime.
I'm very lucky.
That would be I haven't finished my sentence yet. that would be considered patriotic. I mean, didn't you do these USO tours?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because I think
And it was with Al Franken, wasn't it?
Well, I don't want to talk about that USO tour in particular. But yes, I mean, I've done 16 USO tours. And when we had, you know, the fighting going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, I was there a lot of Thanksgivings and Christmases and, you know, visiting our troops because there was an underlying part of me that felt like I did not put on the uniform and I didn't serve my country. I have this idea that probably a lot of our kids would probably do a lot better if they took a couple of years and did service to our country.
Right.
You know, Korea does it, South Korea does it, Israel does it. And I'm not saying that we need to take our 18-year-olds out of high school and send them to the battlefield. I'm saying that they need to do service to their country, whether it's, you know, cleanup or, you know, stuff to where they learn how to serve and they learn what it means to get out of their own their own selves, you know, because I see so many kids are just involved in their TikToks and their Instagrams and their phones and their computer games that they don't even understand that they are living in a community with people around them. They all have to take care of each other.
I think,
absolutely. And I think once you are forced, and I hate to say that, but if you're forced to go in and have some kind of service for a couple of years, I think it'll give kids a different perspective. I mean, think of a lot of kids that, you know, my husband, when he went to college, he's like, you know, I graduated high school. I went off to the Air Force Academy. And he's like, you know, I was still just a kid. I didn't know what was going on in the world. I mean, he was obviously a very bright guy, but he's like, you know, I was still just sort of like this high school kid. And, you know, you get a rude awakening at the Air Force Academy. But, you know, I think so many kids go to college and they don't know it. They're going to college because their parents want them to. They don't know what they want to, you know, major in. They don't really know what they want to do with their lives. I think if you have some life experience for a couple years.
But is it okay that I'm sending my 8 and 9 year old to a wilderness camp?
Fantastic. But I think that's awesome. I think kids at that age need a little agency. I think they need a little bit of freedom.
But they need to learn to work together with others.
Absolutely.
And appreciate others.
And away from you. They need other adults they can trust.
I would do anything to be away from me.
No comment.
All right. Well, we've got to take a break. We're excited for this 4th of July show. I hope you're enjoying celebrating this weekend. And when we come back, we're going to talk to John Paul MacIsaac. You won't want to miss it. It's an intriguing story. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on AM 790 KABC.
Yeah. This is...
Private eyes.
I'm watching you. Yeah, I think a lot of eyes were watching our first guest and only guest today. Very appropriate song. Even though we could be playing some patriotic music on this 4th of July weekend. Art, you got any patriotic music? Coming up.
What
All
about
right.
Born on the 4th of July or whatever?
It's not Born on the 4th of July. It's Born in the USA.
Born in the USA, that's right. See, I have 4th of July
between
on my
Hall and Oates and Bruce Springsteen. That's something we can look forward to. But let's talk about an important topic for a lot of people that has been kind of swept aside. Definitely. Now there's some lawsuits that will probably bring it back into the public eye, or hopefully the public eye will be able to see this, the private eye watching you. The book that's coming out is called American Injustice, My Battle to Expose the Truth. We've had so many people on the show who have had a battle to expose the truth, and there's been a lot of censorship in this country. On November 22nd, 2022, John Paul MacIsaac's book, American Injustice, will be out. You can order it now so you can get the advanced version and make sure that when it comes out, it's on your doorstep. We are going to welcome to Gervie's Law right now the man who was just minding his own business.
Yeah.
On April 12th, 2019, everything changed. It was a Friday night, 10 minutes before closing. He was getting excited to go home, and who should wander into his computer repair shop but some disheveled, maybe drunken, inebriated guy with some bad laptops, three of them that didn't necessarily work that well, with some damage to them. And what did he do? His whole life changed after that, and we're going to hear about it. John Paul MacIsaac, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Welcome. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's really nice to have you on the show because it's important that your story gets out. And as a lawyer, I do want to commend you for filing lawsuits against the Daily Beast, CNN, Politico, Democratic Representative Adam Schiff. Not because I'm encouraging litigation, but if there is a wrong here, the courts should determine that wrong and that
Absolutely.
You should have a fair hearing. Do you believe that in these cases, if it goes to trial, which they probably won't, but if they do, will you get a fair hearing?
Well, I hope so. I know that starting October 14th, 2020, when my information was leaked after the New York Post wrote the story about the contents of Hunter Biden's laptop, the two narratives that were being pushed was that, or at least Twitter's narrative, was that this was hacked material. But the rest, Adam Schiff, mainstream media, social media, they all ran with the marching orders that this was Russian and disinformation. And, you know, I lost my business for about a year. I had to leave my state because of death threats and threats to my physical harm. I mean, they destroyed my business. I went after Twitter initially because if you're ever going to try to fix a computer again, having the title hacker next to your business is definitely never going to lead to something successful. So I wanted to, you know, the way they quickly labeled the material hacked when I was given permission by Hunter to recover data from his liquid damage laptop, you know, that was just not right. So I went after Twitter. Unfortunately, an Obama-appointed judge dismissed the case with prejudice and awarded Twitter all the legal fees. So that kind of knocked me out financially, and I never thought I'd have an opportunity to, A, defend my actions, and, B, hold those accountable. And
John, why do you think that happened? Why would you have been dismissed so easily when you had a lot of evidence, and especially with
when you could prove it,
and you had the contract? I know you've talked about that in the past, where you know you actually had him sign something, Hunter signed something, indicating that you know you were going to have access to the material, and also that if he didn't pick it up within 90 days, that it was going to become your property. So why did that happen?
Well, I think part of initially when the case got started, the judge that took it on, actually we were able to beat Twitter's 230 objection, which was one of the first in I think, history, because 230 has been protecting these social and tech giants for so long. And we actually broke through 230. And I think our big mistake was to prove that I wasn't a hacker, we would have to have Hunter testify. And I personally, I think that there wasn't, that was never going to be allowed to happen. So they switched judges on me in about end of May, early June. And a week later, my attorney was called down to Florida to explain to the judge why this case shouldn't be thrown out. There was a court reporter present that did not write a very flattering article about the interaction. And the case was dismissed by, the end of July.
But isn't there somewhere where Hunter Biden actually admitted that he took his computers into your shop?
He said on several occasions that he doesn't know. He might have a laptop that was stolen, or might have a laptop the Russians have. I think we've witnessed in the past year and a half, 2 years, that Hunter has a track record of leaving laptops in different places. So I don't think he's ever admitted that he was in my store, though his lawyer called me up the October 13th, the day before the story broke, and asked me if I was still in possession of the laptop. So obviously he remembered then, but can't seem to remember now.
You didn't have cameras in your shop?
There's cameras outside the shop. Yeah. I believe I had cameras in the shop by that time. Yeah. The thing is he was nobody.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
He came in to do a job. I felt bad for the guy because initially when I saw the Beau Biden Foundation sticker, I just assumed that this was his deceased brother's computers and he was just trying to get the memories off of them. So I worked with him longer than I normally would on a Friday night and, you know, cut him a deal. I gave him a keyboard so he could recover data from one of the laptops. The other one was a write-off, so I couldn't get anything off of that. The third one, I was like, here, I can check it in for $85. Let me see what I can do. And it wasn't until the next day when I actually saw what I was recovering during the verification process that I realized that this wasn't his brother's laptop, that this was in fact his laptop. But still, it wasn't really that big of a concern. I saw a lot of embarrassing material, but I didn't think
somebody's personal computer.
No, Leanne.
Well,
if you read about,
I saw some of the pictures that were posted online.
No. I think John can tell you a lot more. He probably won't. I mean, even starting with the password. Oh. I know you don't like to talk about password. And by the way, in your book, American Injustice, do you say what the password is?
Yeah.
And it's what, a couple sex acts combined? Mm.
I've always felt uncomfortable about talking about the salacious material on the laptop. I know that it made my Aunt Kathy blush. So, you know, it was, that's a measurement.
But if people want to read about it, they will be able to read about it. So you weren't embarrassed to write it in the book, correct?
No, I wrote everything in the book. It was my way of, like, after Twitter basically financially destroyed me, I thought my only chance at getting any hope at telling my story and getting the truth out would be to write a book. So I poured my heart into this thing over 5 weeks and then spent the next 5 months trying to get people to believe me before I even had an opportunity to get in front of a publisher. So it's been a tough road. So I was pretty honest about what happened in the book, because it's very important, I think, for people to read not just what happened to me, but what can happen to people when our mainstream and social media get weaponized, and what can happen to the country.
I know. I was the first person to come out against Al Franken and during the Me Too movement, and I've had probably a lot of the same similar things happen to me that happened to you. And people came after me. The internet came after me. It was...
Were there threats?
Oh, you should have seen the threats written to me, what they wanted to do to me, to my children, how they wanted to murder me and leave my decapitated bodies. I mean, it was incredible
how people
came to me.
Have you had that experience, the same thing that Leanne's talking about, John?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had Wilmington Police Department. So let me backtrack. October 14th was scary because I had no idea anything was, I was going to get leaked and what was going to happen that day. So by the end of the day, I was exhausted and I was pretty scared because I was getting some pretty horrendous phone calls. And initially, the area codes were from, you know, out west or up at State New York or, you know, just different
far away
places. Yeah. So and last I checked, it's a free country. If people are upset at what I did,
right.
they don't
sure.
know.
This
story,
is July 4th. We're celebrating freedom this weekend.
But then what happened?
Well, then the area codes started getting closer. You know, 856 is across the river in Jersey. 484 is, you know, 20 miles down 202 into Pennsylvania. So I started to get really nervous. So I reached out to the only person at that time that I knew that could help me, and that was Bob Costello. And I said, hey, Bob, it was Rudy Giuliani's lawyer. He was my only point of contact with Giuliani's office. So I called him up, and I'm like, hey, can I call in that favor of security you offered? And by the next morning, I had a Wilmington trooper parked in front of my shop waiting to take down a terroristic threat report. And from that point on, anytime I was in that shop, I had a Wilmington police officer parked out in front. So I can't begin to thank the Wilmington Police Department for stepping up like that. It made my mother happy, too.
Speaking of your mother, we need to take a break. We want to talk about your father because as a 31-year colonel, he has something in common with Leanne's husband. And we're going to talk about his part in this after the break. You're listening to Gervais Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervais Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on AM 790 KABC.
There we go.
Yeah. We don't always play this song on Gervais Law, but today it's really appropriate. Are you a Springsteen fan, Leah?
I like some of his music. I'm not going to say I agree with him politically a lot, but
well, I know
I
you
do
don't.
Like
I know you
music.
Don't agree with him politically,
but I do.
That
like
wasn't the question.
Some of his music,
but sometimes, believe it or not, we have to separate.
Oh, absolutely,
politics
and I can do that
from who the person is and what they are trying to do, and that's why it's so important when we talk about John Paul Mac Isaac, we have to talk about doing the right things, whatever your politics are.
That's right.
And
you got to go for the truth and get justice in that if you were wronged.
And
Absolutely.
That's something in this story as things came out and finally people started to you know, 51 of them started to get away from the Russian disinformation angle. People start to believe John Paul McIsaac.
Well, I mean, the problem is, look at his story. The first thing that comes out against him, oh, you hacked it. You're a hacker. You basically, that's basically saying you hacked into somebody's private material illegally, right? So they're branding him as this guy who's stealing your information online because he can access computers, which was a lie. And then they come out with the rest of the media comes out and is like, oh, this is just part of the Russia misinformation, and he's just a Russian, puppet, and he's doing the work of the Kremlin. And seriously, so they're coming at him twofold. I mean, these are two different things that once, I was always told when I was younger, starting off my career, that you can't argue with people that have gallons full of ink, right? Because basically meaning that the minute somebody writes about you and writes something bad about you, and that's out in the psyche of the world, they're going to automatically believe that or have that doubt, even if you come out with the truth after. And no matter how many of the facts are laid out, people are still going to have that, well, I don't know. Was he a hacker, though? I mean, I know I see the information where it says Hunter Biden came in and signed it away and he never picked it up. But gosh, I don't know. Is the guy a hacker?
Well,
he does steal
him.
In computers.
Let's ask him how he felt when the election was going on back in 2020. How did you feel when you were being disparaged and criticized? How did that make you feel, John? Like, did you feel like there's something wrong here? I did nothing wrong.
Well, yeah, obviously I still don't think I did anything wrong. I wanted never to have the world know what I was doing. After the laptop became my property, and up until that time, I was definitely fearful of my life because there was a piece of paper in Hunter Biden's hands, because he got a copy of the paperwork I got, that said that I was allowed to go through three of his laptops and recover data. So I had a legitimate fear that there was going to be a Secret Service agent kicking in the door and sweeping everything under the carpet. So when I realized during the summer of 2019 that there might be criminal activity on this laptop in regards to Ukraine, and it looked like there was definitely congressional interest in that material, I felt like this is something that needs to go to the FBI, and then the FBI can afford me some level of protection. So that's when we set out to go and have the FBI take custody of it. When people don't understand that process, like all this happened in 2019, and during an election, when the article finally came out in October 2020, I had been spending the past year trying to get this alerted to the authorities' attention and then the members of Congress' attention. When the story broke, the only bits that were allowed out were that I worked, somehow colluded with the Russians to spread this information. I got this laptop in 2019. Who knows what I did with it until I gave it to Rudy Giuliani? And I never got the opportunity to tell my story.
And why did you give it to Rudy Giuliani? Explain to our listeners.
Well, I tried to get it to, well, let me rephrase that, because I tried to keep my identity a secret. I sent my father, who's retired colonel in the Air Force, as well as my uncle, who's a retired colonel in the Air Force, to knock on doors of senators and congressmen to alert them to this material. And we tried that ever, basically. After the impeachment, I realized that the FBI never had any intention on submitting that laptop as evidence during the impeachment trial. I watched the impeachment trial come and go, hoping that I would see the laptop, and I realized that the FBI was not going to play fair.
But they had the information. They did get the information from you, right? They just didn't do anything with it.
They just didn't do anything with it. So I felt like at that point, the FBI cared more about protecting the Bidens than they did protecting me. So that's when I sent my father and my uncle off to reach out to members of Congress to get their attention. And we did that from end of February, early March, all the way to, I want to say, July. And finally, with nobody listening to us and our cries of help falling on deaf ears, I finally said, fine, I'll just do it myself. And I traded my fear for courage. And I reached out to the next best thing that I could think of, which would be a lawyer for the president of the United States. I've tried the Justice Department, I tried the legislative branch, so now I'll try the executive branch. So the only reason why I chose Rudy Giuliani was because I knew he was in the Ukraine in the summer of 2019 researching the same information that I was sitting on. So he knew about it. Plus, he was a lawyer for the president. Those are the only two reasons why I chose Rudy Giuliani. And I never actually spoke to Rudy. I never wanted anybody in that office to know who I was. I only spoke to Bob Costello, and he promised me that he would just be, I was just referred to as Bob's guy. And it really wasn't until the October 14th surprise that that anybody there knew who I was.
Have you spoken to Rudy Giuliani since?
No.
Never?
Never.
Wow.
So this lawsuit that you have, I mean, Adam Schiff, who is a representative, he's on the Intelligence Committee, and you would think that somebody like that that has information, I mean, you're sitting on information that you feel as an American, I'm sure, going, this has political impacts. This is, you know, not even political, but when investigations are already going on and you have this laptop in your possession that is now yours because he has refused to come back and pick it up, you feel a sense of duty, right, to go, hey, I might have something here that I'm just wanting to give you the information. You do with it what you will. That's all you wanted to do, correct?
Absolutely. I believe it was late September. Like I had spoken with my father at the end of the summer in 2019, and we had made the decision that the best course of action would be to go to the Albuquerque FBI because I didn't trust, because of good old politics, this kind of portion of the country. I felt the best thing to do would be give a copy of the laptop to my father, paperwork to my father, and have him approach the FBI in Albuquerque. And they threw him out of their office and told him to lawyer up, and it wasn't for a while until they reached back. But that was October 8th is when my father went to the FBI. I think it was September 28th is when the Wall Street Journal ran the whistleblower story about Zelensky and Trump's phone call. And things kind of shifted for me then, because it was self-preservation up until that point. But mm-hmm. then it really kind of was like, wait a second, the president's going to be impeached by, from what I've seen on this laptop, a very legitimate phone call to figure out what really was the former administration doing in Ukraine at that time. And I view impeachments as a break glass in case of emergency scenario. Like, this is something where the people stand up through their representatives to demand to replace a duly elected president. And that is something that is an embarrassment to endure and go through. And I really didn't want to see the country go through that. So I tried to be as nonpartisan as possible when approaching the FBI, but it was hard not to when you're watching the press tear apart a president that, in my mind, was justified in his phone call.
Did you see the interview that Adam Schiff gave with Wolf Blitzer on CNN when referring to you and the laptop and the information that he said it was clearly from the Kremlin?
Well, that's one reason why he's on the lawsuit. It's he had no intel. From what we've been able to research and discover, there was no opportunity for him to be handed any information that would, from a reliable intel source, that would have told him that this was Russian collusion. So he went out on that news, on Wolf Blitzer, to share with their viewers that his own narrative. Now, the fact that the narrative is the same narrative that everybody else was running at the same time, that's people ask, you know, I hope you get money in the lawsuit. I hope we get discovery.
Right.
Like, I learned a valuable lesson going up against Twitter that I'm going to write a book if I want to survive this. I'm going to find my own way to carve myself a new life
and
out
get
of the
truth
ashes
out,
whatever this is, and get the truth out. But I'm not going to rely upon legal options. So I kind of gave up on it. And it wasn't until last April when the America Project, Joe Flynn, General Flynn's brother, stepped in and said, we'd like to fund some lawsuits. And then I'm like, well, Adam Schiff is ready to go because I've wanted this for a while. But I never thought I'd have that opportunity to go into the legal arena again.
This time, though,
I don't. It's not about money. It's about getting to discovery. I want to figure out who gave the marching orders. Who told everybody to tell 51 intelligence experts that this was Russian or had the hallmarks of Russian information? Who told Adam Schiff? Who told the Biden campaign to all run the same narrative? And that's why I feel like Adam Schiff wasn't speaking on behalf of Congress in a congressional capacity that night. I think he was speaking from his home. A Biden campaign slogan.
So we only have a minute before another break, but I want to ask you quickly, with respect to this lawsuit, you mentioned the word discovery. Discovery is something that happens in litigation all the time. Are you anticipating, since the lawsuit is lawsuits have been filed, that discovery will be taking place coming up? Have your lawyers told you what are the next steps for the discovery in these lawsuits?
Well, I don't want to go into details. We've already had one member of the lawsuit reach out to us because they sensed the impending storm. And I think they understand of how, you know, you take everything away from me and this is all I have left. I'm going to fight like hell. So we're amending and adding and some individuals to the lawsuit. So it is growing in size. I can't give any more information on that, but it will. We have some time. I just want to keep pressure on these people until November, to be honest.
What about the depositions? Have you talked about when that'll take place? Because a lot of information should come out under penalty of perjury, hopefully, without a lot of perjury.
Like when people are deposed?
When they're being deposed. Is that something that you're anticipating in the short term before November?
Yeah, I believe we put a stop or a preservation for material, and we're going through the process. Again, I'm focused in on the book and rebuilding my life and keeping my chin up and my head down. So I'm leaving it up to the Brian and the rest of my legal team to fight like hell for me in that aspect.
Do you think that the book may have been written too soon, or will you have time to modify it based on what occurs in the last couple months?
Well, the book covers from the day that Hunter drops off the laptop to the day that I flee Delaware and get on a plane and fly out to Colorado. So that's March or November 5th, 2020. I am working. I'm halfway done with the second book.
Which there you
basically
go.
Basically, my you know, what I was dealing with on the run. How it's amazing how people will say that they're going to give you every layer of security you could ever possibly imagine as long as your agenda and their agenda are parallel. Mm. I didn't like that a lot because I didn't want anybody owning my narrative. I didn't want to, you know, this is a story for the entire country, not a story for just half the country. And
right.
I don't need, I'm overwhelmed with support that I've received from the half the country that knows that I wasn't a stooge for Putin.
And that's where the American injustice is. We have to take a break. We're talking to John Paul MacIsaac. We'll be back after this.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
There, that's about as July 4th as you can get. I know that Leanne is saluting.
I want to do the crashes.
You're good at it.
I am. I do salute 4th of July. It's a great weekend. And
yes.
I just pre-ordered your book, by the way, hard copy on Amazon. Boom.
You just did that?
I did, yeah.
Right now.
Look, order place. Thanks. See?
Yeah, order awesome, place.
It's going to come within 2 days. There you go.
That's amazing. Great. There. You just got an order. I'm sure a lot of other people can do that as well as they're listening to the show. Go to, it's Amazon. Is that where you
ordered? Yeah, that's where I went. Sure did.
Yeah, Amazon would be a good place
pre-order.
To get John Paul MacIsaac's book. And by the way, Leanne was asking me during the break whether Mac is a legitimate name of yours or it's part of your business.
I get that a lot. So my last name is MacIsaac. My grandfather was Scottish-Canadian and became a U.S. citizen after fighting in World War II. So it's we come from Nova Scotia.
All right.
MacIsaac's up there.
My brother is in Nova Scotia as we speak.
Wow. My husband's flown through there a lot.
You know, I'm Canadian and my whole family's in Canada and they decided they were going to go to Nova Scotia this week. And does that explain the tam on your head, the Scottish aspect of you?
Yeah, I mean, I run around in a kilt quite a bit as well.
Yes.
In the summer months, it's a little bit warm for that behavior, but in the fall and winter, it's quite common. So it's just, a lot of people just take a picture of the head. They don't know that there might be a kilt.
There's a kilt and your garters and all that. It's funny, my husband and I were taking the kids on our first vacation since COVID. So, like, it's been 3 years and we're going to Scotland. We're going for 2 weeks. We're going a few days in London and then we're going up into the Highlands and Edinburgh. We're going all over. So...
We've got the Scottish and the Canadian.
My husband's, he's adored. He's Irish, but I'm like, no, we're going to Scotland.
I love them anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I like
a funny thing about the hat. So when I first started getting a lot of the hate mail coming in, there started to be an underlying theme where, Putin thanks you for your service. Oh, and your hat is stupid. Okay. And I started to get a lot of feedback about the hat, and it was funny. So I decided, if it drives them that crazy, I'll just wear it all the time.
All the time. I love it.
You stand up for what's right. I mean, how people can turn their back on some of the materials. I mean, it's come out, and I'm sure if you get the book American Injustice, you're going to read more about some of the pornography, the dealings, the emails with Burisma, with all of the pay-for-play stuff that you've talked about in the computer, and a lot of the salacious details. How do people just turn their back and want to focus on a hat? I mean, wasn't there so much stuff? And I know
it's politics. People
was actually in there? Isn't it important? Isn't the substance important?
I encouraged a dialogue on what social media has had and banned me during this time. But when initially the conversation gets started and it instantly goes to the hat, I realize that, well, I know where they stand. Mm-hmm. And I know that they care more about the hat than knowing the truth. So I don't see the point in engaging with that person. And it's pretty easy to do. I'm a bit of an introvert, so it doesn't take much for me to drag to the left.
John, were you really shocked by the porn that you saw on the laptop and the fact that you said Hunter was actually involved in it, wasn't just watching it?
Well, an occupational hazard in my line of work is this kind of material. It's not the first time I've seen porn on a laptop. It's not the first time I've seen homemade porn on a laptop. This is probably the largest quantity in one single spot. And I don't like talking about people's addictions because it doesn't seem fair. Right. Their addictions are a horrible thing and every family's got a black sheep. And, I don't want to harp on that. But with that said, Hunter is addicted to looking at himself.
Oh, wow.
The amount of naked Hunter solo photos was just mind-boggling.
It seems like he's addicted to more than one thing, too.
You silenced the crowd here.
I can't get these things out of my head. It's horrible.
Once you see them, you see them forever.
It sounds like that's part of the damages in your lawsuits. I mean, it really has impacted your psyche and your emotions. Is that something that you're pursuing?
No, because I was afraid. I feel like I could have done more. I could have been louder, more vocal, if I had been less afraid of what might happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
For a year, I was afraid that I would lose my business and be forced out of town. When that happens, you're no longer afraid of these things.
Right. Now you felt a sense of freedom.
Well, by that time, it was kind of like I was tired of being afraid. Plus,
right.
I felt so much better when I was getting traction after being more upfront and trading the fear for courage,
pushing back.
I felt like, and then, watching what happened, the complete digital iron curtain descend on the story and nothing being blocked, I realized, wow, this is a lot bigger than me.
Right.
And then to see the depths that our mainstream and social media went to lockstep the story, to spread it. It was just like, this is horrible to happen to anybody. And that's why I'm fighting and wanting to tell my stories, because I don't want this to happen to anybody again. I've already, they made an example of me. They tried to destroy me financially. They tried to silence me. And that's fine, because I'm not going to quit. What do they think is going to happen when you corner an animal in a cage or they fight back?
Right.
So I'm just, and I feel like I have the support of so many people. And again, I can't reiterate how grateful I am for the people that have supported me either through just prayers or GoFundMe, or not GoFundMe. I had to give and go. I didn't want to do the GoFundMe. But it's just kind of, yeah, I know I can't quit now because I have too many people behind me, but I also know that this is, I've been given an incredible opportunity. Like, this fell in my lap. What happened, I think, is an injustice to the entire country, not just for me. And that's why the title of the book kind of sounds self-serving, but it's meant for the whole country.
Well, I think, you know, when you talk about a battle to expose the truth, that's something that everyone's interested in. We only have 2 minutes left. Want to know what the future is real quickly. I know you're writing the second part of that book, but what are you looking at? And hopefully you're on a better plane right now, both financially and emotionally.
And are you still in Colorado, or are you able to go back to Delaware where you live?
I had to come back to Delaware for fear of losing my house because it wasn't my primary residence. And if I had to file for bankruptcy because of Twitter, I didn't want to lose my house. So I'm back in Delaware. I live about 10 miles from Joe Biden. I don't leave the house. I try not to antagonize anybody. I'm just kind of laying low and doing what I have to do to get the story out.
Do you feel safe
on these people
now?
Pardon?
Do you feel safe now that you're back?
In my home.
Yeah, well, you're close to Biden, so you might want to have
a
drink with him. We got to close. I'd love to hear about your husband, Colonel.
Well, he was in the Delaware Air National Guard. So,
The
Bidens always flew into that airport, that tiny little airport. My husband's a colonel, too. He flies C-130s, but now he's out in California.
Well, you guys have a lot in common. I think maybe, what is Leanne, the most important question, what does Leanne have to do to get you to sign her book?
Well, I don't want to give you my address over the wire, but let me know, and I'll hook
awesome.
It up.
Absolutely.
That'd be great.
Thank your father and your uncle for their service.
Yeah, thank
we appreciate
you for their
them
service.
Very much.
And thanks for your service.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And your service, John Paul Mac Isaac. The book is called American Injustice, My Battle to Expose the Truth. It's something that I think a lot of people want to read.
Yes.
I want to thank you, John, on this July 4th weekend, being a patriot and being on our show on Gervie's Law. We really appreciate it.
Good luck with the book and good luck with your
life.
Your life.
Moving forward.
Thank you.
All right. Take
Happy
it easy. Fourth. Thank you. Same to you. And that's going to do it for our special episode, Gervie's Law, on the 4th of July. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.